The following podcast is a W2M Network original production. Visit W2Mnet.com for all of our other great podcasts, plus news, reviews, articles, and opinions from the worlds of wrestling, video games, football, and entertainment.
Super Bowl! Brady has his fifth! What a comeback!
Watson, touchdown! Hunter Renfro, little man, makes another enormous play. 1 second remaining.
Gentlemen, football to the max.
Your host, Sean Garmer, Gary Vaughn, and Randy Isbell.
Hello and welcome to another Football to the Max. As we are here on the Monday night, Tuesday morning edition, about an hour after some big news was announced from the NFL concerning one Matthew Stafford. We'll get into that in a little bit as you kind of get a full preview of what the Monday shows will be like, because this was the dress rehearsal week for the NFL. Some teams actually had their starters play the full first half. Some did not. And, you know, we'll get to talk about that as well, considering some of the injuries we have to talk about. There's a lot of reasons why perhaps maybe you don't need to do that at all. So, hold on 1 second here. Yep, so we'll get into quite a bit of different things here. We'll go through the news as we go through that team's games. That's kind of how we're going to do news on the Monday, Tuesday morning edition shows, because if we sat there and had a section just for news after we talk about all the games, we'll be here for a really long time, and I'm sure you guys don't want to hear us talk that long. These Monday shows are already probably going to be longer, a lot longer than the Thursday ones, just because there's so much to get through, especially once the season starts and you're talking more about actual situations in a game and not necessarily talking about who looked good and whatever. But either way, Eric is here with me, barring any internet issues.
Thankfully, everything is sorted out now.
Yeah, let's hope it stays that way, because this is going to be a fun show if you're talking halfway through and then all of a sudden you're not there. But we might as well go ahead and get started. Let's begin with the crazy Sunday night football game that was there between the San Francisco 49ers and the Minnesota Vikings. Brian Hoyer playing, I think, for the most part, most of that first half for the 49ers, and Bradford, of course, playing quite a bit as well for the Vikings, along with that first team look. And honestly, San Francisco got out to a 14-0 lead pretty quickly. Marquise Goodwin with a big, using his speed to get a 45-yard or so touchdown. The Minnesota offensive line already looking suspect again, with just having them be right in Bradford's face with as much as they were getting popped. Stephon Diggs was dropping passes, which wasn't helping things. And, hey, you know, Pierre Garçon looked really good. He was catching pretty much everything that Hoyer was throwing at him.
Is it wrong for me to overreact, but Was it wrong of me to drop Blake Bortles and pick up Brian Hoyer for my fantasy team?
Well, he's your backup quarterback, right?
Yes.
No, that's not wrong. I mean, yeah, Blake Bortles is... He's Blake Bortles. I mean, we'll talk about it in a little bit, but Brian Hoyer has looked a bit more consistent.
I don't fully trust Hoyer as a starter, but with what he did with the weapons around him, and not even so much the first touchdown pass to Marquise Goodwin, but the second one to Carlos Hyde, San Francisco's got me thinking they're going to be very, very interesting. And lest we forget, if the first half wasn't bizarre enough for you, the second half with long touchdowns on pretty much back-to-back plays?
Yeah, I mean, well, first of all, before you get that, you get a 58-yard field goal from Minnesota and then a 55-yard field goal for the 49ers. So the kickers getting their work in. And, yeah, I mean, you definitely had the things picked up from Minnesota once Cook and Murray, who both had decent outings. I thought Murray sort of outshined Dalvin Cook in this game a little bit, but then McKinnon came in and really lit things up. You had after you have Minnesota score a touchdown, which puts them up like 17-10. Or makes it 17-10 after they'd been down for a while. Mm-hmm. You have this 3rd and 23 from like the San Francisco's at their 10-yard line, and Raheem Mostert just catches this. You know, it's this whatever screen pass. Here he goes. He breaks the tackle. All of a sudden, he's at the 50-yard line. He's still going. Everybody's kind of like looking around at each other, not even really going to get him. He winds up at the end zone, and even Al Michaels is like, oh my God, he scored.
That was nuts. And yeah, if that wasn't enough, McKinnon is like, all right, anything you can do.
Yeah, it was just funny because Chris Collinsworth was like, this is like one of those one in like 500 million times that this will ever happen. During the regular season, and it happens here. And then Mostert would go on to get another running touchdown later. So he had himself quite a night. But yeah, Jerick McKinnon decided on the ensuing kickoff to go 108 yards, basically almost close to the right sideline, and get a kickoff return for a touchdown that made it 24-17. And like I mentioned, Mostert pushed it up to 31-17, and between San Francisco just kind of being inept because you have Matt Barkley at quarterback and CJ Beathard.
Yeah, I was about to say, it wasn't all on Matt Barkley.
Well, CJ Beathard is awful. I don't know how he's your second string guy. That shows how bad things are. I was really surprised Joe Williams didn't come in until really towards the end. He's really been a spark for them, and he kind of – I thought they waited too long to use him. But, yeah, Minnesota obviously has better depth because they're a better team, and they showed that off. And what a heck of a celebration to actually be the team that gets a two-point conversion to actually win the game. A lot of times we've been seeing these two-point conversions that fail and they end up losing the game. But, nice to see Newby get the touchdown, and then Henneke just runs it in, jumping over the pylon to get that two-point conversion, and Minnesota wins.
With bad ribs, no less.
Yeah, bad ribs, no less, but Mr. Sendejo and Harrison, the two safeties for the Vikings, were not happy about their defense at all against the 49ers, and I don't blame them. They were getting carved up left and right. Just didn't seem like that Minnesota defense that we're used to seeing.
No, and I mean, yes, they did rely on really the newer version of the Purple People Eaters that gave some success, but yeah, there were way too much open space downfield, way too many missed tackles, and yeah, when you're relying early on your slightly better than anemic offense, and you mentioned their kicker, he's in competition with Forbath. So making a 58-yarder, then turning around and missing a 47-yarder, it...
Yeah, and that 47-yarder wasn't even close.
No, it was the way that the 58-yard field goal looked, he should have missed, but he made it.
Right.
So you figure the 47-yarder was no problem. Same sort of wobble, and it goes wide.
Just wanted to mention for Minnesota, too, their sort of backup receivers, Coley, Adams, those guys looked pretty good against the third stringers. But
yeah, and when you got guys like Case Keenum, which I still don't know how he's your backup. I really would have thought Heineke would have gotten more time with the
Keenum team. Was okay, though. I didn't think he was awful.
No, he was. It's not that he wasn't awful. It's just that competition has been so close throughout the preseason, and I would have thought, of all games, Heineke would have had a shot with the twos to see how he could do with the twos. He didn't, but then looks what he does at the end of the game.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, it's that this was the most thrilling game of the week three of the preseason. There was some real clunkers, let me tell you, that I had to watch. I think Eric had more of them. That's kind of how the cookie crumbles sometimes with these. But
I did get a little bit lucky, although Indy and Pittsburgh, yes, it wound up a close score, but ugh. I mean, ugh.
Exercise of futility there. So before we get into the changing, twisting turns of going back and forth, we did both have, you know, Eric covers the Oakland Raiders for Raider Ramble, and of course the Cowboys are my team. They played each other in week three of the preseason, so this was a game that we both watched. And definitely the offenses were on display here. But then the defenses also showed their liabilities as well. We'll get into a certain big injury for the Cowboys in a little bit. But, you know, Derek Carr was here. He made his presence felt. He looked shaky at first, but he settled down later. The Patterson catch for 20 yards for a touchdown. Then, of course, the kicker misses the extra point, which made me laugh. And then the big almost 50-yard touchdown for Amari Cooper as well a little later on was sort of the highlights of that offense. Then Dak Prescott and the Cowboys came out. Zeke got some first downs. He wasn't overly impressive, but I think he did just enough. And Dak once again leads the team on a scoring drive. It wasn't the touchdown they were seeking, but he got that later on a Witten touchdown. McFadden looked good, didn't fumble this time. They did have some costly penalties from one Lyle Collins, which ended drives, which was very stupid to see. I get it, he's learning that position, but once you get tagged for illegal hands to the face about two different times, you'd think you stop doing it the third and fourth time, but you got plenty of more penalties for it. And like I said, the team suffered not getting a touchdown. They had to go for a field goal for it. They had a 50-yard catch for Terrence Williams called back because of it as well. Just not a great deal. And also, Olawale suffered the same thing. He had a 50-yard first down that gets called back because of a block in the back. And that's when the Cowboys found out they would lose Anthony Hitchens as he goes down, clutching his knee. Everybody is fearing the worst, torn ACL kind of deal. It came out, I think, at some point on Monday, that he has a tibial plateau fracture in his right knee, and he's out 8 weeks. Thankfully, it's not the whole season. There is still 2 weeks of training camp left. So technically, he'll only probably miss about 5 games because week 6 is the bye for the Cowboys.
A tibial plateau fracture. That's a first. I mean, I get it. I have a vague idea of knowing what it is, but that's a first.
Yeah, I mean, this is a big blow for the Cowboys depth-wise. I mean, he's been their either strong side or weak side guy, and he's been very effective. He was very effective in this game until he got hurt. And now you're going to have to, you know, Cowboys say they're not playing Jalen Smith more because of it, but Justin Durant's going to have to step up more. And that obviously affects what you're doing. So, you know, just going to have more from that front line as well as work harder on them. That's already going to be suffering from suspensions in those first at least couple of games, first 3-4 games. As well, the later when Cooper Rush comes in, he has the really big mistake where he fumbles. It gets taken back for a touchdown. And, you know, that looked good for the Raiders at that point. But then after that, Cooper Rush settles down and the Raiders defense looks like the Raiders defense.
The Raiders defense looks like the Raiders defense, not to mention, outside of Derek Carr, we've had some bad luck with the 2-minute rule this season. EJ Manuel seems a little bit inept at it.
EJ Manuel's awful, so.
And I thought Connor Cook would come in and be like, okay, solidify that number 2 spot, get the game-winning touchdown, and no.
No, I mean, he was close. He played better than Manuel. But
he did get very close, and I still think he'd have the number 2 job, but like you pointed out as well, our secondary needs to not be Swiss cheese in order to have anything close to what happened last year.
Yeah, certainly. Tillman got a catch for a touchdown. And then Cooper rushed through a big bomb to Lance Lenoir, which I didn't know where the defense was on that play. And there's also some dumb penalties by the Raiders to extend drives for the Cowboys, too. Unnecessary roughness penalties.
Well, the Raiders have been known for penalties since the 60s. You're not getting that out of the Silver and Black's DNA, so you can just hope to team it.
I believe you, but there's a certain point where those players are gone and you got to start being smarter. Obviously, look, again, it's the third strings and everything. They're more likely to make mistakes and all that. Like I said, though, it was very close. They got up to third and goal and they had to deflect the pass away in order for the Cowboys to win 24-20. Overall, I think, you know, the Raiders and Cowboys are right where you think they are as far as offensively. They're going to be powerhouses, just like they were last year. I think the Cowboys are still worried about that offensive line with Collins and once again, Chaz Green goes down to an injury. This dude cannot stay upright. And the Raiders, you know, they were getting their pass plays no problem. Jalen Richard was up to himself again. So, you know, it's just the defensive issues on both sides. That's going to be liabilities.
And I'm hoping either a little bit of change in scheme or shaking up different coverages. For the Raiders, they're not completely lost, which is a big, big thing. But there's still a lot to do. At least we have guys like Khalil Mack in that front 7 who can still come up with a hell of a run.
Well, I'll start off the alternating games here with Kansas City and Seattle. Alex Smith started along with Spencer Ware and the rest of the offense. Spencer Ware did not last very long at all as he goes down, and we find out later that he has a PCL tear and some LCL damage and other damage that is going to keep him out for the entire season. He had a career-high 921 yards rushing last season. And in the first year without Jamaal Charles or anybody being in front of him. And now he goes down. Kareem Hunt came in, looked fine. And I think he was already going to get a couple snaps. He was going to get snaps because he worked well as a third down back and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be mostly Kareem Hunt with some Charkandrick West, who did not look good in this game at all. And CJ Spiller kind of taking duties. Do you think this, how much does this hurt Kansas City?
It hurts them a bit, but if West can figure out some things, it won't be as big of a loss. I mean, granted, I would like to actually see CJ Spiller get a few more carries, but it's something that the Chiefs can at least work around. Now, they're still going to have a lot of issues in the passing game. I think that's where you're going to see much, much more of the effects. But I don't know. With how an Andy Reid offense works, they can make tweaks. But I don't know how many tweaks they can make with this being kind of bare bones that you have.
I think Kareem Hunt will come in and fill in just fine. You're going to lose some production, I think, obviously, but he's faster. He's much more of a guy that can hit that big play, and he can be a force in the passing game, too. So I'm not that worried about it. Again, it's just it's an option that gets taken away if you're Kansas City, and that's never good. Sucks for Spencer Ware, but this is why you draft guys, right?
Mm-hmm.
To be able to take that spot. Speaking of runners for Seattle, this Carson kid, number 32, he looked really good.
Has been the past few weeks.
At various times. Eddie Lacy, when he was getting the ball, he was running hard, going at it. Of course, Thomas Rawl was injured, so you didn't get to see him at all in this game. The passing game's the same for Seattle. Russell Wilson was making plays, running around. Then he'd find Jermaine Kearser 50 yards. You know, he'd find Carson. He'd find Jimmy Graham on some plays. You know, so offensively for Seattle, things look pretty good. The problems, like you mentioned, for Kansas City are going to be there, right? They lose Macklin, who was their kind of one, like, big-time game-changing receiver they had. And now it's all on Travis Kelce, and if you factor on him, you key on him, who he did have a few first downs in the time that he played, you're, once again, kind of in a by committee approach with Tyreek Hill having to shoulder a lot of the load, and depending on who you're playing, especially like a good defensive team like here with Seattle, that you might run into a problem there, I think, where things aren't going to be as easy as last year.
You're definitely going to run into a problem, and this puts even more on Alex Smith's shoulders. Very capable quarterback, but nobody to throw to. And when you have nobody to throw to, what are defenses going to do? 7, 8, 9 in the box, come at them. I don't know if Kansas City really can.
Yeah, De'Anthony Thomas did get a kick return for a touchdown, too. That's where about half of KC's points came from. But thank God for Seattle that they only have to play Russell Wilson, because behind him is a putrid load of quarterbacks. Trevon Boykin can't hit the broadside of a barn with a pass.
Nope.
He is awful. And even then, they block a punt for Seattle. Seattle gets their punt blocked. They recover it. But then Boykin, so bad, he throws an interception on the next play. So that whole thing gets wasted. And then Mahomes, I think it was a combination of the line behind the first team is not good. They don't have a lot of great depth. Mahomes was running for his life for large periods. And then if not, it was getting extended by dumb penalties by Seattle, roughing the passer, necessary roughness or whatever. He didn't have the greatest of games. It wasn't until Tyler Bray came in behind him in the middle of the fourth quarter that Kansas City kind of started stepping it up again. But by then, Seattle kind of had things in hand. And, yeah, I mean, Seattle looked really good in this game. The defense looked much better than they have been in a while. I think positives could be taken from this.
Yeah, now I just hope Seattle actually loses, because you don't want that 4-0 kiss of death going into the regular season.
Well, what did you think about the Patriots and Lions? Two big stories coming out of this. We'll get to those in a little bit. One of them, it wasn't in this game, right? Did he get hurt before this game or during this game, Julian Edelman?
No, it was during.
Okay.
This was during the game. He went down with an ACL. It was a little bit awkward, but the Patriots, being the Patriots, immediately adjusted. Now, I will say, while Kevin Hogan was inserted into that slot receiver spot, had some incredible catches, and, well, the Patriots offense, being the Patriots offense, raced out to like a 24-0 lead. I don't see Hogan being the Edelman replacement, mostly because of his size. How the slot receiver position works with the Patriots, smaller, quicker, easier to get open snaking through defenses. So I see Danny Amendola fitting more into that position. But if they adjusted to go for more strength and size over speed, then Kevin Hogan is the choice.
Chris Hogan, rather. You're thinking of the Browns backup quarterback, I think.
Well, yeah, he played too. But, yes, for Chris Hogan, see, this is how much I can't even stand the Patriots. But as annoying as it was to see them have that much success and knowing that they're going to be that successful still, it's very, very plug and play in this system.
Well, I mean, you mentioned Amendola. They have Malcolm Mitchell as well. You know, let's not forget Brandon Cooks, who's going to be, you know, his number one. Gronkowski, even Dwayne Allen is there as your second tight end. They lose Martellus Bennett. In comes Dwayne Allen. No big deal.
Nope.
You know, so they have the ability. They're really deep at receiver, at tight end, that they can suffer that. Now, if Gronk goes down again, I think that's where you're going to be missing Edelman a lot more. I'm not saying that you can replace Edelman. I don't think you can. I think he's still Brady's number one-ish, number two receiver behind Gronk, like most dependable guy. They know each other like the backs of their hand. There's something to be said for that, right? You're not going to get that with just anybody. This is a big blow, but from a Patriots standpoint of what they're going to do, like you mentioned, I feel like they can cope with it.
They really can, and that's why I say they have a very plug-and-play type offense where even in this game, they didn't miss a beat. So if they, again, if Gronk can stay healthy, and even then he had a pretty quiet night against Detroit, they're going to be fine.
Yeah, I mean, he did throw that touchdown to Chris Hogan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you didn't hear much from Brandon Cooks, but also Deion Lewis is kind of starting to come back to form. And yeah, I mean, anything on the Lions end?
Stafford looked understandably miserable. Downright miserable against the number ones on the Patriots defense. But, I mean, Golden Tate, he still stepped up. There was just very little, really, to see. I mean, yes, as the Patriots really called off the dogs in the second half, that's when you had Jake Rudock come in, start to move offense a little bit more. Brad Kaya looking even better as Detroit's number three, but ew.
Amir Abdullah had a good game.
Yeah, he did. And there's another guy. I'm not even going to pronounce his last name because it's like six or seven syllables. But I believe he wore number 10. He got open and made some very big plays, including a touchdown. I'm not even going to pull a marshmallow just for the sake of things. I'm just going to leave that as it is. Because I know if I try now, I'm going to butcher it even worse.
Of course, the big news dropping, like I said, about an hour and a half before we started here. Matthew Stafford gets the extension that a lot of us were talking about as soon as the Derek Carr money was laid down. 5 years, $135 million extension with $92 million of it guaranteed, making Matthew Stafford the highest paid player in the National Football League with $27 million per year. Now, let's be honest, I thought that they wouldn't get him for less than 29 or 30 million. So I think the 3 million drop in price is actually a nice cover for that. You know, he's only 29. There was a lot of people going, well, Matthew Stafford doesn't deserve the money. And I want to tell you why he does deserve the money. Stafford has only had one negative TD to interception ratio, 13 to 20 in his rookie year. After that, he's thrown for at least 4,250 yards and 20 touchdowns in every season. And he's completed more than 65% of his passes in those seasons, too.
Yeah, I mean, look at what he's done. Even if you factor out having Calvin Johnson, I mean, look, he's got
played better without Johnson because and he's passed the ball around.
And this is my argument. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but I know he has at least one 5,000-yard season to his credit. Doesn't he have about two?
I know he has one. I'm not sure about the other one, but
yeah, because I know
it up while you talk.
Yeah, because I know he was knocking on the door of 5,000, even in a separate season where he was right in the race with Drew Brees for breaking Dan Marino's old record. So, with what he's done to elevate this team to get them to the playoffs and have as much success as they have, yes, he needed to be paid. And I think the reason why they made the cover on the annual salary, look at the guarantees. $50 million as a signing bonus. $60.5 million guaranteed that first year. You go over 2 years, $86 million. You go over 3 years, $92 million. So he's really going to get paid and have everything borderline front-loaded. I don't have a problem with that.
Yeah, and I think it takes off some pressure for him to feel like he had to have this ridiculous season in order to justify getting the money. He'd already done a lot already in his previous work to justify that, and now he gets paid and he doesn't have to worry about it, you know. So officially he has one 5,000 yard season in 2011, and then the season after that he was really close, 4,967 yards.
Yep, I knew he was knocking on the door back to back 5,000s.
Yeah, and then after that, as mentioned, you know, last year he had 4,327. You know, he played in every single game. I mean, he's played in every single game since that 2010 year where he got hurt, had the big injury.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I mean, 24 touchdowns to 10 interceptions, not the gaudy numbers he had the previous year, but still better than 2014 numbers and some other years. So, again, he's been consistent.
Yeah, very, very consistent, and it's a matter of building one or two pieces around him to help get the team over the hump and competing with the Packers, winning a division title here or there, getting more playoff wins. You can feel that over the next couple of years that can come, as now that you've got your franchise guy locked down.
Yeah, you're right about that. And we now move along to the one of the crosstown sort of rivalries here. The New York Jets and the New York Giants, another wild game that didn't wind up as nice in a bow like the Minnesota one, but very close. Christian Hackenberg looked awful in this game, throwing two pick sixes. One of them was just right to the guy, which was, you know, no joke. He kept getting sacked as well because he's making dumb decisions. Matt Forte did play and looked decent at times. Eli Manning also threw an interception because he got hit, which I think they were even talking about the lineman that allowed that to happen may not make this team because of that. So,
well, first of all, the Snoopy Cup is no joke. I mean, I got a borderline angry / questioning call from the New Yorker after it happened, trying to figure out what happened. So, yeah, with all the talk about Eli Manning and this ongoing debate through the rest of his career about his numbers and they're good enough and where he ranks, you got to protect the guy. He's on the verge of starting 200 straight games.
Yeah, that's something to be said, and yeah, I mentioned Forte looked decent, but he did have the moment where he was tackled in the end zone for a safety by JPP early on. I should mention that Eli Manning is playing without Odell Beckham and Brandon Marshall, who set out both of them set out this game with injuries. So, you know, you had Sterling Shepard, Mr. Ingram stepping up and looking good. In various parts, Greg Lewis dropped a touchdown, but then redeemed himself later. It went up to a 19-0 lead, and this was at the end of the first quarter. So that'll let you know how bad Hackenberg was for that. Hackenberg looks like a little child playing with men out there. Yes, yeah. He led them on a scoring drive with a field goal and everything, but the inexperience shows, right? And I do want to say the Florida State receiver, Travis Rudolph, he looked really good in this game, by the way. They might have a diamond in the rough there that if Beckham has to miss any time, Rudolph might be able to step in and be one of those, you know, sneaky sleepers in fantasy or whatever, if you want to you know, talk about it that way, but he had a 55-yard catch and run. Just he was very even when Geno Smith was out there, he was the guy you could depend on as far as catch of the ball. So, you know, I'll just say that. Watch out for Travis Rudolph. He could be a guy that, as the season progresses, along with Ingram, you see Eli Manning kind of go to them more instead of always relying on Beckham or always relying on Marshall. But if all these guys pan out, you know, if Beckham has one of his years and Brandon Marshall can even be half of Brandon Marshall, you bring in some of these other guys, you can have like a 4 or 5 wide receiver set, and it's like, who the hell do you guard if you're the opposing team?
Well, I mean, you really can't. When you're doing that with these sets, you can't. You're screwed because you really can't stop any of them. But the thing is, will the Giants be that dynamic and try these sets a little bit more? I think with the conservatism and with the way their offensive line is, I'd be hesitant.
Yeah, the kind of the story of the game is that Bryce Petty comes in, and of course he gets helped by having Bilal Powell as well, who's very dynamic, and he helps them with an 85-yard touchdown catch and run that he makes that goes in for one of the touchdowns. He also throws a nice rifle to Stewart, and he throws another one later to Stewart as well, just by himself in the end zone to make it 32-25. But then he gets hurt with an MCL injury. They're saying it's not major. He could still actually be the backup for week one. But then Hackenberg actually leads them on a drive to get within a point, but the two-point conversion, I don't know why you run on a two-point conversion. It limits the abilities you have, and it's no good, and the Giants wind up winning another game, which would have been in overtime had this been regular season. But, I think something needs to be commended for what Bryce Petty did, throwing 3 touchdowns, getting around 200-something yards. I wonder if he hadn't gotten hurt, if it would have made a difference. But Josh McCown named the starter, at least for week one, probably because Hackenberg was so bad. It was like the lesser of two evils. McCown's only played like one series this whole preseason.
Yeah, I mean, you go with a guy that's got the experience, which McCown has, but personally, if Petty gets healthy, I think he could easily win himself the starting job. Easily. There's a reason why McCown has played for a countless number of teams in his career.
McCown has now played for 7 different teams in his 15-year career, just to be exact. And yeah, if Petty gets healthy, and say McCown's not lighting the world on fire, we could definitely see him, say, come like week four or five.
Yeah, in news flash, McCown ain't gonna light the world on fire.
Honestly, for me, if unless you have to, Hackenberg needs to just sit. He's just been that bad, and then you're gonna put him against the ones the whole game. He's not gonna get better.
Yeah, that's just going to be a no.
I mean, there's people that are saying, like, just put him out there and let the Jets lose or whatever.
No. As is, people are already suggesting that you're tanking, which you still might be. But just, no, don't throw him out there.
Since we're not talking about them because their game happened on Thursday, what do you think about Blake Bortles being the named the starter of one of your teams? I'm going to give you here what Doug Marrone says. He says, I look at everything, not just the quarterback position of how we want to play, what we want to do. I think Blake has the ability to extend plays for us, which I think is going to be helpful in what we have to get done. He's good enough for me to stand here and say he gives us the best chance to win
over
Chad Henne. Bortles has only been named the starter for the Jaguars season opener and was not declaratively named the starting quarterback for the entire season. The QB competition is obviously not over. Bortles says it's a cool feeling, but it doesn't change his mindset. It's going to be a constant effort. And obviously, you know, he knows that he's got to go out there and perform. But
if this is the attitude you have, then why not you actually do something? And I don't know, try Brandon Allen out there. What have you got to lose in that instance?
I can't say anything. I'm partial to Brandon Allen being from Arkansas and everything, but you know.
Well, I mean, even
look,
with
they invested a lot in Blake Bortles. Remember that Marone's idea is Fournette's supposed to be ready for week one, is we're going to run the ball until we can't run the ball anymore, and then Bortles is going to throw only when we have to throw.
Oh, God, it's going to be another crap season. I can feel it in my bones. And I mean, even with your partiality aside, Brandon Allen is the only one that's been able to move the ball on a consistent basis. Chad Henne
against the third team guys, though.
Well, that's why I say you should have done like the Bears did with Trubisky. Move him up, give him at least a little bit of a time with the ones. Chad Henne, I still don't know how the hell he's on this team. Blake Bortles has got his receivers complaining about keeping passes in bounds, and you're throwing 5 interceptions in practice. I mean, dear sweet Jesus, Marone, are you trying to get fired?
Are you
trying to really pull a Buffalo Bills? No, you can't even pull a Buffalo Bills because you had a great team on the verge of the playoffs and then you up and bounce. I understand that. Why am I sober?
Why are you sober? I can't explain that to you. Just, you are. So, you know, one team that hasn't named a starter officially, the Chicago Bears. They went in to Tennessee. They won. Mike Lennon kind of played better than he has. He threw a touchdown, had some yards. What did you see?
He did do a lot better, and the Bears take the mantra of, okay, we're going to script our first 15 plays, see what works. And especially towards the outside of that Titans defense, it worked very well. The offensive line performed better, gave Glennon a little bit more time. He was still able to get the ball out of his hands quickly to kind of redeem himself. Once those scripted plays were over, you saw the problems and vulnerability. Now, with Trubisky, he did have a lot of success with the twos and threes, against the twos and threes, but I really can't argue against the way he played with the ones. It was still a little bit of a struggle, but if you see with the kind of caliber throws he's making, once he was able to get the whole field to him, it's a matter of you get the timing down, this could still be that dynamic offense. I also like seeing Victor Cruz with another couple key catches. Things were okay for the Bears. On the opposite side with the Titans, Mariota was just off. I don't know, maybe if the ball had a magnet to the receiver's hands, that may have helped, but passes were short, passes were high, passes were overthrown, passes thrown too far outside, too far inside. It was just ugly.
Yeah, that's what it looks like here. That they had to leave the Titans offense in there until the fourth quarter.
Yeah,
they were so bad. Mike Mularkey didn't let them out until Derrick Henry scored that touchdown.
Yeah, Mularkey was just pissed off. And again, Henry was the only one who looked good, and I'm slightly partial to him because he was a Uni guy, which, why did he have to go to Alabama? I don't know, but I didn't make that decision.
Yeah, I mean, listen, this isn't positive for the Titans at all, with both quarterbacks looking good against your defense, which is supposed to be improved. Your offense isn't going on all cylinders, but the Bears did get some bad news, and then Cameron Meredith has torn his ACL.
And that was
their number one receiver. And this puts them in a really bad spot. Kendall Wright is now your number one guy. Kevin White has still not performed to any kind of expectations at all. And, you know, you decided to go without Alshon Jeffrey. It's going to be a committee, you know. Will Victor Cruz kind of do better? Marcus Wheaton's going to now have to be a figure. Who do you think kind of steps up?
I think Cruz, because while he's hardly played, he shows that he's still got it. So I expect him to get quite a bit more action as the season develops.
Yeah, it's going to take a little bit of time. I expect Marcus Wheaton to kind of be a bigger deal. We've seen Kendall Wright have a bigger role, but again, that's really sad that you made this investment in Kevin White and he still hasn't really been able to shake that big injury that he had.
No, but then with a lot of that, it's mental. And I mean, still see something going on in his routes, but when you got a guy who's understandably afraid to be hit, this is what you deal with.
Yeah, I don't know, but hopefully for the Bears, it's not that bad. I mean, at least for them, between Cohen and Morris, or Howard, sorry. I forgot who the first running back is for the Bears. 24.
Yeah, that's Howard.
They'll be good on the running game. So that might be able to offset some of that. But, yeah, I mean, moving things along here, the other kind of cross-rival matchup between the two LA teams, Chargers and Rams. All the Chargers points came off the first team with Phillip Rivers and Keenan Allen specifically really hooking up and looking good. Melvin Gordon didn't think he could do too much here, but he was good enough. You also had a Melvin Ingram recovery off a Goff hit and fumble for a touchdown. Goff threw an interception as well, which helped things. So Goff didn't look too impressive. It was 21-0 for very quickly because of Goff's problems. But yeah, Travis Benjamin gets that 45-yard touchdown. Phillip Rivers just coasting along. And it wasn't until you hit the wall that is Cardale Jones, not unfortunate for him that the interception that gets thrown is not his fault. It just got taken away from the receiver. But still, it's that, like, he's good at throwing those sort of intermediate routes to the running back and right there in the middle of the field. But whenever he has to kind of make a progression.
Well, that's because that's all he had to do at Ohio State. I mean, he was extremely raw. And this is what you get from raw players.
No, you're right about that, definitely. But it just, you could tell that there's obviously a lot of work to do here with him. And that's where, you know, the experience of Sean Mannion pays in for the Rams, because obviously he still, at times, looks better than Goff. And he was able to find receivers, you know, get him a field goal, get a touchdown going. Soon it was 1921, and for a and after that, nobody could score. So it was just a game of going back and forth, and the Chargers basically held on to that lead that was put up by that first team offense. Because between Cardale Jones and Kellen Clemens, they just really couldn't get to anything consistent going. And the Rams' defense was missing a pass rush, really, and you have to wonder, that Aaron Donald holdout, that's getting dangerous now.
Yeah, it's getting dangerous, and you can't get to the opposing quarterback. You've got your quarterback that, let's face it, he's really not too big on getting hit himself. You're going to run into some major, major issues. I hope that the Aaron Donald thing gets resolved soon, because it's going to be another potentially bad season if it doesn't.
Yeah, the Chargers also got bad news in one of their linebackers, sort of a backup linebacker, tearing an ACL as well, and him being out. But the Chargers have quite a few injuries, and they're all sort of stacking up, and not good for them, especially on that O-line. They need to figure that out soon. But again, at least the first team offense looked really good, and that's the positives you want to take here. And the defense was really active as well.
Yeah, the defense really held up. Now you'll wonder, again, these injuries, how much of a toll are they really going to take? And who's left that can really absorb the pressure? Because the Chargers have this mindset, okay, we're getting a little bit of a fresh start, but we have this team, we're major contenders, and you realize, even with this division, no, you're really not.
Yeah, that's going to be an issue. It could easily be the Raiders running away with everything, or it could be close. It mm-hmm. kind of just depends on the teams and how they hold up defensively, if they're going to end up beating each other up, or they win a lot. So, you know, and by the way, we've seen some of the other teams in that division play this week. You know, it's one of those bumpy roads that it's going to be for them. So, if Houston didn't score a point, obviously, after this, they would find out the news about Hurricane Harvey, and you've gotten J.J. Watt raising $500,000. Now his goal was for $1 million. Chris Paul pumped in $50,000. New to the Houston area, obviously, for the Rockets. And the Jones family has put in $1 million. Robert Kraft has put in $1 million. The NFL has put in $1 million, helping that city of Houston get better. They've officially moved the Cowboys and Houston rivalry game that was supposed to be played in Energy Stadium, which is not flooded, but the area around it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to be played at AT&T Stadium. So that game will happen. There was a lot of thought about perhaps they let Houston and their players fly home on Wednesday and just cancel the game, but they're going to go ahead and do it. And probably for the players' safety, just had them in Dallas where they've been practicing until the game's over, and then on the weekend, see if things are getting better, because it keeps raining there, which is not helping. It keeps raining buckets, and it keeps flooding.
That's because Tropical Storm Harvey, and you can blame, at least I look at it, and it's possible that the system that's here just off of the coast where I am, which is borderline set to become Tropical Storm Irma, that system of low pressures may be affecting what Harvey's doing, because Harvey hit land, now curled around, is back out of the Gulf, and is going to hit land again. And with Houston's flat landscape, 50 inches of water has nowhere to go.
Exactly. They were even thinking about opening the dam and everything else.
They did.
Yeah, so, you know, with all that going on, this before then, now Louisiana looks like it might get hit as well. They're no stranger, obviously, to hurricane, tropical storms, all that. Houston loses to the Saints 13-0.
And that one, Deshaun Watson had a lot more of his rookie-type moments, not being able to connect. Then again, Savage really wasn't much better. And this, not really.
No, Hopkins.
No.
Or any of the other big receivers. So that should be said.
Well, yes, and it really showed because they were extremely thin in New Orleans. I mean, of course, they were missing a few of their top players. They did a pretty good piecemeal, however. That was just... It wasn't the New Orleans I was used to seeing, but then again, I can see exactly why.
What about Adrian Peterson? He played in this game.
He played, and he had a little bit of a spark. I think he and Mark Ingram are going to be a very good tag team, and especially since Breeze is on, let's face it, a little bit of a downslope, even though he'll still be on fire. I think this is going to be a much more complete Saints offense rather than the leaning towards pass heavy that we've seen the past few years.
And let's not forget about Alvin Kamara, who's been tremendous.
Well, he's been tremendous, and he stayed tremendous. I can't forget about him, and he'll fit fine in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, the Broncos, who had already named Trevor Siemian the starter previous to this game, they wound up winning, but that's mainly because Aaron Rodgers was taken out of the game really early,
mm-hmm.
and Brett Hundley played for the most of it. Siemian ran for first down, threw some passes to Demaryius Thomas. There was one he threw way too high and got into the interception. And he got, Paxton Lynch kind of left early too because he got hit low. And then you didn't see much of him after that. So it was basically Kyle Sloter being in the game for the most part. Denver defensively looked good though against the ones. Rodgers had a few, you know, nice throws or whatever, but when you're having to go against Brett Hundley, you're going to look much better. Montgomery looked good running the game, in the run game, but it looked better, actually, once you had the more seasoned runners and Montgomery, Jones, Mays, those guys running. Hundley had to really just be running around. In fact, Hundley ran a touchdown in. He wasn't too impressive throwing the ball, but that's kind of to be expected. That's his calling card. Like I said, Sloter's been pretty decent for the Broncos, you know, for the most part. So this was another one of those where he looked good playing against the twos and threes, but. Yeah, I don't know, unless you're a Packers fan that's, like, loves Brent Hundley or whatever, just, you know. Look, he had his moments, but if the Packers had a better quarterback, I think they would have won this.
Yeah, they would have, and again, Denver really kind of did themselves favors. I do believe Lynch got hurt. Because I
read
something in the news with the issues with his shoulder.
Yeah, he did. He got hit low, and then he wound up with a shoulder injury, and then he didn't come back in. So.
I kind of like Brent Huntley. I'm just hoping that he'll stay with the team long enough as a backup to kind of progress, and basically they can do with him like they did with Aaron Rodgers, because I hope he can be something, but he can't just rely on that escapability, that talent, and that arm strength. He's got to do something better with it.
Yeah, speaking of doing something with talent, that was the case for the Redskins here, who looked awful as a first team. I mean, I don't know what you want to say for that squad, but that first team was just downright just nasty. I mean, for the Bengals, you know, AJ Green was himself. He caught quite a few passes from Andy Dalton. Looks like he's going to be back to himself. John Ross, if he can get going, he's going to be good. I thought Joe Mixon looked decent for his time. Jeremy Hill was the one that scored the touchdown, but if, you know, Mitz can get some touches, he's going to be interesting. Terrell Pryor, he's going to take some time to get adjusting to that offense. He made a good catch at one point, but then he missed one that would have been a much bigger deal for Kirk Cousins. Jordan Reed didn't factor too much in the game because he's still nursing that injury, but again, I want to say that they kept Kirk Cousins around until about the third quarter, just because I think they wanted to see the most they could out of him because the offense wasn't looking good. Rob Kelly had a few interesting runs, wound up getting the touchdown and all, but still, I feel like that offense doesn't look the same. And, you know, I said it, there's only so many times you can bet on yourself. Might be betting on himself a little bit too much. I also want to note that the Bengals punter made a ridiculous move, like almost like a behind the back move to avoid getting the punt blocked. That was freaking amazing. So
a little bit of like an Australian rules in him there. Like that.
Cousins did throw a pick six to Vontaze Burfict, but you know, Vontaze Burfict, he isn't the
sharpest tool in the shed.
Yeah, he's possibly facing a big suspension, 5 games, in fact, according to NFL.com's Ian Rappaport, for a hit, which was a legal hit, by the way. He's saying he lived with a shoulder. I guess the NFL saying it was a head neck injury, or sort of head and neck shot on the 49ers guy.
Not to mention prior reputation. I mean, let's be real here.
No, you're not wrong. Prior reputation is a big deal here. Look, if you want to be honest, it's one of his least atrocious hits, if we want to go that way.
Mm-hmm. But
still, it was, again, you know, did you have to do it? Is it one of those where it really would have made a big difference? I don't know what the league exactly is looking at here, but yeah.
I think a lot of stupidity. And let's face it, that playoff game against Pittsburgh, the image of that does not go away.
Speaking of games here, the Cardinals and Falcons.
Can I just say,
First game on Mercedes-Benz.
Can somebody dim the damn lights in that stadium, please? I mean, I get it, but my God, it's like they were playing outside. Ugh.
Maybe that was the intention?
No, no. At least I hope not. I mean, between that and having a Chick-fil-A in the stadium, that... Don't even get me started. When it came to the play on the field, I mean... I really can't say what happened except very, very sloppy. And when Matt Schaub came in for Atlanta, how the mighty have fallen.
Well, Matt Schaub has been terrible for a while.
Well, yeah, but I mean, you would think he would have gotten at least back to some level at some point, but no. And then Arizona sharpening up on defense and making a couple big plays beyond that overcame some not quite shortcomings from Carson Palmer in the offense, but it was a little bit more lackluster in this game. Yeah, they got the 24-14 win, but...
John Brown looked the best he's looked all preseason, at least.
Yeah, and I think he's shaping up to be the number two guy right behind Fitzgerald and maybe even at some point the number one. So with him emerging, that was very strong.
Yeah, and Matt Ryan didn't look his best, like you said, so...
No, Ryan didn't look his best, Schaub didn't look his best, I mean... The trio of Mats are going to create an interesting conundrum in Atlanta.
Well, after all this time of making us think that it was going to be the Brock Osweiler show, Deshaun Kizer officially named the starter before this game, which I feel like is the best chance the Browns have to do anything, because Brock Osweiler just, there's things that he just doesn't have and is not going to have. Kizer can throw the ball. We know that. He threw quite a few bombs. Some didn't work out. But one guy that looked absolutely tremendous was Corey Coleman. He was catching everything that Kizer would throw his way. And then even after Kizer, whether it's Kessler, whether it's he wasn't playing once Hogan was in. But, yeah, he looked really good. Kenny Britt caught a ball, then dropped one that made a drive stall. But... Yeah, and the Browns' defense looked a lot better. Winston had problems in this game. He threw an interception, which didn't look good. He did kind of redeem himself in the two-minute drill towards that end of the second half. But other than that, I mean, it should be noted that there was no DeSean Jackson or Mike Evans either. So he's having to do with the Cameron Brate, O.J. Howard, and then the rest of the guys. And still, you know, Dye looked good. Godwin, some of these other guys were efficient. They were catching balls and stuff. Just, it wasn't enough for Winston. And they just, like I said, the Browns defense has been looking better than they have been. And, of course, Kizer, with those ones, getting protection, getting help there. Duke Johnson, if he hadn't fumbled the ball at the absolute wrong time, I think they would have at least got another score. So
yeah, they would have. And I mean, even though the final numbers say 6 of 18, I have a lot more confidence in Kizer going forward than I do with Osweiler. So I think, yeah, definitely the right choice.
I think only a few things left here. I'm making sure that we hit everything news-wise. I think the only thing left we'll get into in my last game here, and then we'll talk some Ezekiel Elliott decisions here by the league. But yeah, so what did you see in the Colts and Steelers?
Landry Jones finally learned how to be a capable quarterback. I never thought I would utter those words.
Me neither.
I'm serious. Maybe it was Josh Dobbs' performance that lit a fire underneath of him, but making better throws, not entirely being just a statue, and I was legit impressed. I mean, I would also hope on the other side that Stephen Morris, being partial to the U, would do something to beat out Scott Tolzien. Kind of a mixed bag, but yeah, the Colts are going to be awful without Andrew Luck.
Yeah, they are. Tolzien didn't look too bad, but you don't want him starting games.
No, unless you're willing to end up with a bunch more ties.
Yeah, I don't think you want that at all. If you're the Colts, let's hope that Andrew Luck gets a speedy recovery. Something that the Bills didn't want was Tyrod Taylor getting a concussion, but he does, and he that's pretty early on. So from a lot of the game, you see rookie Nathan Peterman, who, you know, didn't look very good. His first four drives went for about 11 yards total. That Ravens defense, again, no joke. They have been doing terrific stuff.
Well, they've had to.
Well, yeah, but again, their defense is good, just like it was last year. So, I mean, Bills, for some reason, Bills fans want Peterman to start over Taylor or TJ Yates, who also got a concussion in this game. But he looked far and away the worst of the three, honestly. And I think it's unfair if Tyrod Taylor gets to play longer, you never know what you get at that point. But yeah, the Ravens were being a nuisance, getting in their face, causing pressure. We know the secondary has been much improved. You got Terrell Suggs still there. Ryan Mallett wasn't, the best, but he wasn't overly awful. I think he got helped a lot by the fact that the running game is improved for them. You know, Buck Allen had some moments. The kid Mizell looked really good. Going against the second and third teams, he got a touchdown on a catch. The Ravens looked a tad better than the Bills, but that's not saying much because their backup quarterback wasn't anything. But again, I just want to point out that the Ravens' defense was absolutely ridiculous in this game. They are going to be something tough to contend with. But if you're the Ravens, seriously, you're hoping that John Harbaugh is not joking when he says that Joe Flacco is going to be back for week one, because that's a totally different team when he's not playing. That is, Ryan Mallett cannot be your starter week one. He just can't.
No, they need Flacco in desperately.
Just surprises me. I get it that Baltimore's probably one of the most volatile cities and all that stuff, but having Colin Kaepernick there just to see what he could give you wouldn't have been a bad idea.
You have a volatile city. You have Baltimore military town being not too far from Annapolis and the Naval Academy. But I think at some point ownership really needs to cave.
Yeah, Reggie Ragland got traded to the Kansas City Chiefs for a fourth-round pick, which isn't a bad exchange for them. It's a 2019 fourth-round pick, by the way. He hasn't really played at all. He had a torn ACL last season, and he kind of works better in the 3-4, so that was the Bills' excuse for letting him go. Of course, they're obviously rebuilding as well, even though the fans don't want you to know that. And, you know, the Chiefs get a guy that adds depth to their linebacking core, so I don't think it's a bad move.
No, I mean, it's okay. I can see, and again, minimal investment with a future fourth round pick, so Not bad.
John Harbaugh got an extension on his already current deal. Now he gets to stay with 2019. He's only the third coach in the team's history. He's been there since 2008. It's been 85-59, and no team besides the Patriots in his tenure has gone to the playoffs as much as him. So I just don't think you can argue with the success. Obviously, winning the Super Bowl as well helps.
No, and I mean, he's provided a lot of stability. Ownership's been behind him. I like this contract extension because, well, you're not really going to do too much better.
Yeah, and I forgot to mention that Jamaal Charles played pretty well in the Broncos and Packers game. Looks like the Broncos are saying he played well enough to make the team, because that was supposed to be his prove-it game. He carried the ball. He made some cuts on some runs that looked like he was kind of back to his old self. I don't think he's going to have that same burst that he had, you know, in his previous seasons just from all these injuries. But he looked like he could still help, and he made a terrific block at one point that saved from Simeon getting whooped. And he can still catch passes as well, which helps.
Yeah, and I'm glad. I would have also liked to see more Stephen Ridley, but if Jamaal Charles makes the team, I can't complain.
And finally, more Ezekiel Elliott talk, because obviously his hearing is tomorrow, or later today, or whenever you're listening to this. And the Mr. Henderson, the guy that's looking at the appeal, put restrictions on what's going to be heard here. He denied the request by Elliott's lawyers to have Tiffany, the woman that accused him of domestic violence, at the hearing to kind of explain her story, because a lot of what they were basing off of is that she doesn't get her story straight. She says one thing to one person, says another thing to one person. You can't. It becomes easy to discredit her, but Henderson says that they have the information. They're not going to allow Elliot to have her present, and that it's not going to allow the lead to use notes to compile during an interview with her as part of the appeal. And the forensic evidence obtained by the league during its investigation will be allowed to be presented, though.
So,
you know, I feel like they're just stacking the deck.
They are.
Here against Elliott. Again, he still has the option to take it to court if he wants to try to get an injunction here. But just, it feels like, again, they're not being totally... they're not being totally fair here.
No, they're really not. And I'm curious as about the motives behind it, and now seeing where this goes for the hearing and the subsequent suspension, whether of all of this it still gets reduced or what happens.
I don't think it'll get reduced. Like I said, either he somehow comes out and believes in himself, look, I didn't do this, and he gets the league to buy into that, or the lawyers somehow get the league to buy into that, or it's going to get upheld in it 6 games. I don't think they're going to waver on that at all as far as lowering it. That precedent has been set that they want that violation, the first one, to be 6 games. And again, Elliott's probably going to have the recourse of, well, do I want to go through the hassle of taking it to court, believing strongly that I didn't do anything, or do I just take this and come back on week 8? You know,
if anything, if I'm Zeke, I'm like, yeah, if this doesn't go right, I'm just going to take this L and move on.
I don't know, but it's a pretty big L to take, though. I mean, this is sort of also, are you admitting guilt once you stop fighting it? Because if he's saying, look, I didn't do anything, or I didn't do this. She hasn't gotten her story straight. And in the court of law, this would be admissible to have her sit on that stand. And if they could discredit her there, you know, what does that say?
Right.
I mean, the league doesn't have to have all that. They can still say, look, we're going off of the evidence that we want to use. You know.
And they pretty much are.
Right, they pretty much are. But again, like, you know, even if he takes it to court, and the league, you know, has their evidence that they want to use, and, you know, the courts say, look, in the court of law, this doesn't hold up. But the league still has the decision, they can make the decision they want. Then, you know, it's up to the court to say, look, we don't think he did anything here. And, you know, you really shouldn't be taking his right to work away. But, again, you know, the NFL is pretty powerful. They have their ways around this kind of stuff.
Yeah, I love to see all the potential battles that are going to come up because of this. And it's just one of those things that no matter how hard we try, it ain't going to be pushed away. It just isn't.
Yeah, we'll have to see what happens with this appeal. We'll find out more. And obviously on the Thursday show, this will probably be one of the topics that we discuss further, as, again, all the preseason games are taking place on Thursday night. We will probably just kind of cherry-pick some games to talk about, and then, you know, whatever news is going on, that's sort of what will be on that show. Just a reminder that next week we will not have a show on Monday night, Tuesday morning. It will be a Tuesday night, Wednesday morning show, as that will be our season preview for the upcoming NFL season that begins officially on Thursday, September 7th with the Kansas City Chiefs and New England Patriots playing in the season opener before everything kicks off on that Sunday, September 10th, and then the doubleheader Monday night game on September 11th, which will be, thank God, it's only 1 week, because I don't think I can stay up till like 1 a.m. watching a game and then have to sit here talking. We might have to figure out something of maybe we can record parts of it before that the two games start, but I don't know. They start early, so.
Yeah, with the ESPN, ever since they got the Monday night contract, is, okay, we'll do 17 games throughout the course of the season. But since there's no Monday night on week 17, we start with a week one doubleheader. And usually for that week one doubleheader, that first game kicks off at 7.
Yeah, instead of like 8:30. So.
Right.
But all right, that's going to do it for us here. I did say it was going to be a little bit of a longer show. We kept it into that hour and a half range. Trying to make it a little faster. A lot of times, there's not this much news going on at once as well that we had to discuss. So, but yeah, hopefully you enjoyed what you heard. Hit that subscribe button wherever it is you listen, whether it's on part of the WTM network, whether it's on Last Word Radio on Blog Talk Radio, we're part of them. You can also listen to us on TuneIn, Stitcher, iTunes, YouTube, Google Play, Player FM, wherever you like to listen to podcasts, we are there. And if we're not on your favorite podcatcher, you can send us an email, w2network@gmail.com. Hit me up at WTMSean at WTMNetwork for the official website, Twitter. Visit WTMNet.com, leave a comment on the post. That also works. Or, you know, always hit up Eric at Squid Sports Head as well to tell him what you think. What did you think of the preseason week 3 games? Who stood out to you? What do you think about some of the big news? Does Stafford deserve that money? I know there's a lot of people thinking he doesn't, but he does, guys. He does. And again, we'll be back with you Thursday night, Friday morning edition, talking about the couple of the last preseason games, who might be looking good going down to cut day. We'll have the decision on Ezekiel that we'll get to talk about that and more. So until then, see you later, everybody.
Peace.
The following podcast is a W2M Network original production. Visit W2Mnet.com for all of our other great podcasts. plus news, reviews, articles, and opinions from the worlds of wrestling, video games, football, and entertainment.